You are listening to WSCA 106.1 FM. I am Mark. This is Black Knight Meditations Underground Heavy Metal every Friday night, 9 p.m. until 1 a.m. Eastern. The show broadcast and band interviews are available for streaming and download at blackknightmeditations.com or at bnm.podomatic.com. Email me for a request if you want to talk hard rock and heavy metal. Email me bnmradio@live.com, and I've still got copies of Metallica's SNM Digipack CD as well if you want in on that action. Tonight on BNM, you've been hearing all live music, album tracks, rare recordings, radio broadcasts, and again, bootleg cuts as well. Some of these are bands that I have seen live and love very, very much. Some of these bands I've never even seen live. You're going to be hearing some live Armored Saint coming up in just a bit. I've never seen Armored Saint live. And I've been the fan of the Saint since the 80s. I've never seen them live. So I hope to in 2021 when touring gets underway again for everybody pretty much. The band is releasing their excellent new album, Punching the Sky, on October 23rd via Metal Blade Records. So I've got Saint vocalist John Bush on the line right now to talk about the new album, Punching the Sky. Again, this album is just awesome. If you like Armored Saint, you're going to love this album. It is fantastic. Thanks for calling in, John. I know it's about 6:45 out in California right now. I hope I'm not denying you your dinner right now, am I?
No. I just drove out to a friend's house. I just got off the freeway, and I survived with all the lunatics on the road here in L.A. at traffic hour. And I'm calling you on the radio, and I was going to ask you, what if you weren't an Armored Saint fan? Then would you still like the record? How about that one?
Thank you for asking me a question. I appreciate that. You know, I've been a metalhead since I heard Kiss in the 70s, and I don't like every band that's popular or well-known. It's been around forever. And there are some Armored Saint songs I don't particularly like as much. So I admit, but I'm not kidding. I love Punching the Sky, and I've been on air. I've sworn up and down that when hands down at the time might have been the band's finest hour up there, right up there with Symbol of Salvation, personal favorite of mine, Raising Fear. But you guys, you've eclipsed it with this new record, Punching the Sky. It's almost like you finally made the perfect Armored Saint record. So absolutely love it.
That's pretty high praise there, brother. I appreciate that.
I'm totally being honest.
You're making me blush.
Well, you know, I wouldn't, like, I like Delirious Nomad. I would never say that's the finest Armored Saint album. So, you know, I'm just being honest as a fan. I mentioned earlier that tonight on this broadcast, I'm playing all live music, some rare stuff, even bootleg cuts, you know, to appeal to some of us who are diehards, which got me thinking, when you were a young rocker back in the 70s, maybe even into the early 80s, did you or any of your friends ever go to a concert and sneak in a cassette recorder to record it so you and your friends could listen to the show afterward? You ever do that?
That's funny. I have to think I did. I can't really remember an exact concert I did it to. But I have to believe I did, and I'm sure it sounded terrible.
Of course.
Like most of the things that people did back then. I mean, you had like, Walkman? Could you record on a Walkman? Or I guess you could, right? But, and then you stuck it in your pants if you got it in or under a jacket or something, and then you recorded it, and, you know, it was just probably super overdriven, and, it's amazing that certain bootlegs sounded as good as they did, because I'm sure the recording capabilities weren't very good back then. But and then you can see video, too. Like, if you type in YouTube, like, the first concert I ever went to in my life was Kiss, Anaheim Stadium, Ted Nugent opening, Destroyer tour. I was 12 years old.
Oh, wow.
And it was just unbelievable. I was just, you know, way overblown by everything, the crowd, the band, everything. But it's funny, I think you can see some of that on YouTube, and I'm thinking, who filmed it, and what did they use to film it? Because it's not like you could just parade a big camera in to record, and that's what everything was going to be filmed on back in the day. It wasn't like you had an iPhone. Now everything, the quality is really high. So, and anyway, that's the cool aspect of YouTube, where you could literally see these artists and see these concerts from, you know, probably the 60s even. But, you know, my favorite bands are the ones I grew up on from the 70s. So what got me started.
And the fact that you were at the Anaheim show in 76, oh, man, I'm jealous of that. I know about that show.
Legendary one.
Oh, yeah.
And I think Bob Seger was on the bill.
Unreal.
I believe Montrose was as well. So, and I don't remember if that was with Sammy probably was, I was just like, I knew Ted. I barely knew Bob Seger. Obviously, he was, you know, was there for Kiss, and it was great. It was a great gig, and you know, it was a good way to start my rock and roll life.
Wow. So, you know, I was going to ask you if you ever did go online to YouTube and look for some old concerts that you attended. I know I've done it at concerts I attended years and years ago, or even recently. You know, just because, and that's why the whole thing about people holding up their phones at shows, that's why it's still a thing, because it's just the updated variation of taking those cassette recorders into concerts back in the 70s and 80s, because people just want to be able to hear it years later, and I totally get it, and I still do that
right.
too. Absolutely,
well,
I get it.
If you seen our new video, End of the Attention Span, which is like the first single of the record, and we made a video for, and the basic premise of that song is you know, people's attention span getting kind of smaller with being inundated with so much technology. But you know, it's funny because there are pros and cons. I'm not just showing the negatives here. There are pros, and one of the pros is I could say, okay, we'll find an Irma Saint show, you know, whatever it is. New York City, 2002, whatever, you know, B.B. King's. It's usually there, you know. And so there's stuff that people film all the time, and I am grateful for it because I could see it. One of the verses in that song, I kind of bust chops on people watching shows, watching the concert throughout the whole show through their phone. And it is weird if you're performing. I think I could speak for a lot of musicians that when you're performing and somebody is like, especially the close proximity to you, they're like, I can do the phone the whole show. And it's like, dude, I'm right here. You can see me. You're right there. Like, you don't have your filming yet. I get it. And it's cool. And I'll watch it later. But, and this is not a good, I'm not having a good gig, so I wish you wouldn't film it. But hey, that's beside the point. But, like, you know, that's the kind of the ball busting that sometimes I'm out there, because, you know, it's weird to have beer at a show and to still be watching it through this tiny screen. That's peculiar to me. But, you know, I am grateful for when I could book the show later, and that's the happy medium, I guess.
Speaking of live recordings, The Saint released your live album Carpe Noctem back in 2017. I did speak with Joey Vera on release day for that record. He had said, and I want to get into the business aspect of Armored Saint before we get into the music. He had said that the original idea of a live release was an EP to help promote the tour you were going to be doing with Queensryche, to have product out there. And we know that, you know, for years now, we know that product helps promote the tour, as opposed to the old days where, you know, you toured to promote product. But so with it, keeping in mind that the new studio album, again, Punching This Guy Out on October 23rd, is in the midst of no touring anyone anywhere, was there ever any thought by Armored Saint Incorporated to hold up the release, to either hold back submitting it to Metal Blade or going to Metal Blade and saying, look, let's hold off on this until we start to do some shows in 2021? I mean, we know that Metal Blade is a business and they've got to put out product to sell, but did the band ever consider waiting until you did have shows to support the album?
Well, that might have been mentioned in a conversation about, you know, when we were going to release it in conjunction with this mania that's going on, but to me, actually, it's a perfect time to do it because you can't go to gigs, because there are no shows, because bands aren't on tour. You still want music. You still want new music. You need to kind of hide away from the, you know, like I said, this insanity and this uncertainty that we're living with COVID. And so I think music's actually the perfect answer, because you may not be able to see us live or a lot of artists right now, but you can still listen to the music. And hearing new music, you know, gives you a chance to still be exposed to the band and get excited about what they're doing. And then, you know, hopefully the shows will eventually follow through here in the new year. But, I mean, who's to say? I don't know. You know, I know a lot of shows are just kind of pushed back a year, or people postpone their tour 6 months. But, you know, and I'm an optimist, but who knows for sure if that's going to happen. It's not like all of a sudden January 1st is going to be different from December 31st. You know, it's just a day in calendar year. It doesn't mean that all of a sudden everything is going to be back to normal. So I hope it is. You know, I miss going to shows as much as I miss performing at shows. So it's just a drag. It's a huge element of my life that's been, you know, put on hold, and as a fan and as a musician myself. So You know, I mean, I got my fingers crossed that things can change and pick up, and, you know, this thing can be behind us. In the meantime, listen to the record. The good thing is, by the time we play, everyone's going to know the track. Right?
Well, that's
They're
true. Going
to know the whole record frontwards and backwards, and that's the positive side of it.
Well, let's talk more about the new album. Back in 2010, the band released La Raza, which I liked. I did like it. But I loved When Hands Down in 2015, and like I said, at times it was my favorite Saint record, but Punching the Sky has eclipsed it, and I thankfully love this album. And we know that the Saint is not exactly a full-time band. It's your third album in the last 10 years.
15? Right, well, pardon me. I don't want to make myself older than I am.
the old memory's going.
Okay, 10 years. There you go, 10 years. You're right.
So do you feel that since you guys have been at this for so many years, I'm guessing songwriting and album recording, that whole process is second nature. And you're a singer. You're an artist. I want to know about the challenges this time around during the Punching the Sky process. Did you have any obstacles vocally, or did you hit a wall with coming up with those excellent patented vocal melodies that you've been so known for so many years that are, of course, abound all over this album? What challenges, if any, did you yourself face in the Punching the Sky process?
Well, you know what? Believe it or not, I don't really feel like there was that many stumbling blocks or writer's blocks. You know what? I'm consider myself lucky, and I think the band is pretty much grooving when it comes to that. So I think everything is a stepping stone. So La Raza was a step. You know, that had been 10 years since Revelation, so there was a big gap in time there. Obviously, I was doing other things musically with playing. I was still in Anthrax for four of those first years, and Joey was in Faith's Warning. And, I mean, we were busy doing things. I was raising a couple kids, what have you. But in the case of it still putting out music, it was about a 10-year span. And then we made that record, and then 5 years later, we put out When Hands Down. And I think La Raza was a big step to get When Hands Down made. And now When Hands Down showed progress to help this new album, Punching the Sky, get pushed forward. And I think everything is just a stepping stone. And believe it or not, I think for Armored Saint, as long as we have an open mind about things, I think that things kind of come easily to us when it comes to writing. You know, we just want to try to experiment. We don't want to be stuck in thinking, oh, we can't do that because is that metal enough? We don't know. No, we try different things. We try different instruments. We want to mess around with different arrangements. You name it. We really do. We want to do that. So I feel pretty confident about the stuff we've been doing and the music we've been making. To be honest with you, and you know, I think this album, you know, Punching the Sky, is just a major step forward, to be honest. So I feel lucky that we still got it, that I still got it. I could still write lyrics, sing. You know, who knows? I don't know. I make the joke like I don't know when, for how many more years I could sing with something like, you know, Ring of Fire or you know, Can You Deliver, but. I can do it now, and I can still belt it out. So until that day comes when I can't, you know, I'm gonna push it. I'm gonna try hard and you know, just make my craft the best it can be. And luckily, we're doing pretty well, I would say.
Well, you better keep singing Rain of Fire until you're 6 feet under. As a fan, I just want to point that out.
I mean, somebody said, well, can you do it 10 years from now? You're thinking, I was like, okay. I mean, I'm okay with my age. It doesn't rattle me too much. I'm 57. We're all about the same age. So 10 years from now, 67, Rain of Fire. Wow, that sounds like a tall order. And I really don't even want to evaluate that, to be honest. But, you know, right now I feel great. I feel pretty strong. And, you know, we're just going to take it one day at a time. And you know, yesterday I was practicing the set of a show we're going to do. We're going to do a live stream. We should mention that, by the way. We do a live stream at the Whiskey at Go-Go, which is a famous club here in L.A.
Right.
Since we can't do shows, we're going to have to play this live stream still on our own, which will be fun. It'll be weird because we're not going to have any fans there, maybe a handful of people like family members or something, but that's what people are doing these days. But the cool cool thing is you can watch it all over the world. So it doesn't matter if you're like in, you know, Stockholm, Sweden, or New Hampshire, or South Africa. As long as you have Wi-Fi, you can watch it. So it'll be really cool. And you can go to armadsaint.veeps.com, and that's where you can pull up the live stream. And it's a good deal. It's only $10, and then you could have this bundle where you can get the record, or you can get the record and also a T-shirt. So we're real excited. And that's the only show we got booked for now, so we're going to roll with it. But it's going to be fun because we're going to play some of these songs and some deep tracks. And, Rain of Fire, we're going to play it, so I've been practicing.
Right. You know, I was just about to ask you, are there songs on Punching the Sky that you feel are screaming to be played live every night? Because I will say, I think the band, you kind of screwed yourselves with this one, because I think you have to open every concert from now on with Standing on the Shoulders of Giants and then go right into the Attention Span. It's like, this is your best album opening 1-2 punch ever. So what song?
Well, I'm going to keep the set list tight. Lips are pretty sealed with that, but I think it's a great record. I'm proud of it. I'm super happy that you like it, and I'm flattered by that. As far as I won't reveal the set list right now, but we are going to put some of these songs, so we're going to have to like get to know those, and that's going to be a little bit of a challenge, because if you've never played a song live, you got to figure it out and find a way to get it into a place where it feels comfortable. Those old songs, those are, I could do those with the back of my hand. Although we are doing a couple other deep tracks that we haven't played that much, including the song Isolation, which we did a song we haven't played that since the 80s, and we did a version of it online not too long ago, which was pretty cool, as live stream, one of those tracks that everyone does from home. But now we're going to pull that out and play it as a band, so that should be pretty fun. But yeah, it's going to be cool. It's going to be exciting to play, and it's going to be like a bit of a glorified rehearsal, but we'll rock it.
All right, and again, as a fan, I understand you don't want to divulge what the set list will be, but I'm going to push you a little bit, and let's see if you cave. Are you going to cover at least one track from every studio album?
Well, that's always my goal. I always like to do that. I don't know why. It's a little silly thought of mine to try to, because I just feel like, I'm a fan too. And when I go to a show and, look, it's a challenge when you're an older band, because you have older fans. Those fans want to hear older songs, so you do have to play those. Of course, you want to play some new material, because that's your new stuff and you believe in it. So it's just a fine line of how you do that. To me, it's cool to play a song off every record. I think that's just a cool thing to do for the fan base. And you certainly don't want to, like I said, play nothing but old material, and you certainly don't want to play nothing but new material. So you just have to find that balance. And, we do that pretty well. I mean, I'm pretty honest about the set list. This one will be a little different, because we took a couple out of it that I can't even believe we're not going to play. But it's because there's another song from that record that we have to play. So I'm revealing a little too much right now. But in any case, it's one gig. This isn't the tour that we're going to go and do. So it's just one show. So we're going to have fun with this particular one. And like I said, we're going to play a few new songs. So that'll be fun and exciting as well.
And of course, us fans know, we know you guys have to be able to please yourselves. I mean, you've got to be happy and content with what you do to offer us. I mean, we don't want to see you guys up there just, going through the motions. Fans notice stuff like that. So we want to see you having fun.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I mean, it's a tough call, because that certain songs kind of have to be played. I mean, there's a fan of, a band I love, believe it or not, I'd probably be okay if they didn't play a couple of hits. I would, but some people in the fans and the crowd, they might be pretty pissed, So, I love you too, and use them for an example. Like, I don't have to hear Sunday Bloody Sunday ever again, maybe for the rest of my life. But, I don't, that's how I feel, especially live. But if they didn't play it, some people would be like, well, okay, they didn't play that song. How could they not play it? So, I think it's because it's overplayed. The same way I feel about a lot of songs from a lot of artists. It's like, we know that song. We got it. You don't have to play it. Play something a little deeper. You know, I'd be okay with that. But again, you know, certain fans might be pissed.
No, I get it. I mean, it can be, as a fan, it could be interesting. I just remember seeing Def Leppard live on back in 92, and they didn't do Photograph, and I'm kind of scratching my head like, really? Really? You know?
Wow.
But at the same time, if I go see Ozzy, I mean, I never want to hear Crazy Train or Paranoid ever again, ever.
Right.
I just don't
want to
hear
it.
Yeah, so.
And you're going to hear it.
Of course.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, Sabbath, when they played the Hollywood Bowl, which is one of their last shows in L.A., if not their last show in L.A., and they played like all these deep tracks, a lot of the first album, and they played the Hand of Doom, which was really, you know, wow, I couldn't believe they played that. And I love War Pigs, but I mean it's one of the best heavy metal songs, especially lyrically, ever written, but like I didn't need it that night. But you know, of course, the kind of go with the flow type of Black Sabbath fan who's, you know, yeah, man, I'm a paranoid. It's like, okay, that's good for that guy. There you go.
I hear you. You were listening to WSCA 106.1 FM. This is Black Knight Meditations. I am Mark talking with John Bush of Armored Saint. John, I want to talk. I want to get your feedback about a couple of songs off the new record, Punching the Sky. Right now, and I've been listening to this thing over and over, Nothing Else. Right now, my favorite cut off the record is the closest thing to a ballad on the album. It's not a ballad, but it's the closest thing to it, and that's Unfair. I love the darker vibe on this one. Tell me something about this song.
Well, it's actually kind of a somber tone lyrically. It was written about these two kids that were very close friends of my two children, and they were in a car accident where they were killed by a drunk driver. It was crazy. It was out in the middle of the desert near Palm Springs. The driver was the father. The mother was in the car. We knew them pretty well. They were friends of ours. And then the two kids both went to school with, the daughter was older than my daughter, and then the son was went in the same grade as my daughter. So it was just a devastating circumstance. They got clipped by a drunk driver. Both kids like kind of almost died on the spot. Both parents were there. It was like, I mean, it was the worst scenario ever. It really was. And it was, you know, just something that was just a devastating circumstance that happened. And Joey had this music to this song, and I thought it was amazing music, but I also felt kind of a mixed emotion of trying to write a song about this, but I also felt compelled to write a song about it. So it was weird. It was like I felt so much to write this song, but I felt very weird about it at the same time because of the circumstances. So I don't know. At some point, I tried to work with it, and again, lyrically, actually, it came rather easily. And in the end, we recorded it, did a demo version, and we were just sitting there going, wow, that's pretty awesome, amazing track, so we got to do it, you know. And it was something that we didn't think would make the record, but once we finished the demo, it was like, wow, this is pretty spectacular song. So we ran with it, and, you know, it's something that's hard for me to explain in terms of the situation and really the sadness that happened. But you know, I gave the song to the mom and dad, and you know, I was like, I'm giving you this, but I, you know, again, I feel weird about it. But they were touched by it, and they were both like, they're musically inclined, and they're artists too, and she's a writer, and I think that they really appreciated what I did and what the band did, as sad as it was. So it was a tough experience, actually, but I think the song is really amazing.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. That one, I mean, they all stood out to me, but that one especially, and when I knew I was speaking with you, I just had to ask you about it. And of course, I'm not going to hear that song the same way now that you've explained that. Still an amazing song,
you know,
though, for sure.
Why don't you think the band has always been willing to do, you know, slow songs or big songs, you know, longer songs that have start off slow and build to kind of a crescendo? I mean, you know, I mean, you can go back to probably songs like Freebird that kind of, it was inspiring to do that for us. And, you know, maybe something you hear off an Elton John record. And then, you know, it was funny because Metallica started writing songs similar to that with, like, Fade to Black. And, you know, this kind of started off slow and built to a big ending with guitar and leads. Love to Love, it's a song by UFO, one of my favorite bands of all time. You know, we used that for inspiration. So we were always kind of messing around with very slow songs and not being afraid to tackle that. And it's cool because Unfair is very different from a lot of the other slow songs that we've done. So again, always just trying to be creative and pushing the boundaries a little bit. And I think we did that.
Awesome. I love it. The closing cut on the album called Never You Fret. When I first heard it, I immediately felt a Symbol of Salvation vibe, the Symbol album vibe, probably because of that riff. So what are your thoughts on Never You Fret?
Well, it's cool because Never You Fret kind of is more of a lighthearted and it comes after Unfair, right? I think Unfair is the second to the last song of the record. So, Never You Fret's a cool song. It's kind of a song about the band, if you will. It's kind of like our second version of Underdogs, which is a song that came on Raising Fear, which you said it was one of your favorite records. And it's kind of a song about the band, is about, basically, like, no matter what happens, we're always going to kick ass as a group and kick butt, pardon my French there, hopefully that wasn't that. we'll always bring the house down because, we believe in ourselves as a group. And the music that we make, it has kind of like this relentless beat and groove to it. It almost has like an industrial feel to it. It reminds me a little bit of like Ministry or something. I know the relentlessness of the riff and the verse. But it's a groover, and lyrically, it's kind of more of a fun song.
Yeah, when it came on for the first time, I got this Symbol album vibe from that. I think it's because of what you were saying with that riff, it just keeps going and going. I want to ask you about one other new song that stood out to me. Again, they all did, but Lone Wolf, and this has got another it's got another one of your patented vocal melodies that you're known for. This album has them in abundance, and it's got a great guitar solo too. So, what's the story behind the lyrics to Lone Wolf?
Lone Wolf is one of those songs, one of my favorite tracks actually on the record. Again, it's one of the more obscure songs. You got the Never You Fret or the Gun, which is another song, or even the Attention Span, which is heavy hitter slammer. And then Lone Wolf kind of takes a turn a little bit. It's a cool track. It's kind of I'm paying tribute to the people that are on their own in life, and I want them to know they're not forgotten. About kind of like maybe being a part of society, but still feeling like, I'm okay on my own over here. And then kind of getting back into the fabric of society and then stepping away a little bit and being on your own. So, again, I don't know. I had the title. I thought it was, sometimes Lone Wolf is actually using a negative association with like maybe some terrorist or somebody who does some bad stuff to society and, in terms of being like a person that is, can mess up a lot of people here, but I take it in a little different way. I take it as a way to say that this is a paying tribute to the people that are on their own, and it's a cool song. It's a little bit of a Faith No More feeling to it. Some of the vocal melodies, in particular the bridge section. That has those big vocals that Joey did on the chorus that, sets it up. That it sounds like something you would hear like on an old school, like, soul record or something. So, I like it. I think it, again, shows a ton of diversity. And I look forward to trying to play that song live. It would be pretty nice.
Oh, cool.
Challenge.
Awesome. I do want to ask you about a couple of other songs, older tunes. And oddly enough, one of them was what you just mentioned, Underdogs. I was going to ask you about that, but you've already touched on that. So a song that I feel is one of those forgotten Saint tunes that should be a fan favorite is Burning Question. What do you think about that song?
Burning Question. Well, Burning Question is a cool song. It's funny. When we did this whole Symbol of Salvation play it in its entirety. There was a couple tracks that we barely played maybe once or twice or never played at all. Burning Question was one of those. It was kind of, the vocals were very high. It was difficult to sing. They were a lot of energy, and there was a lot of lyrics. And even though it kind of has this slower verse part, there's just a barrage of words. So it was a bit of a challenge. I had to make some adjustments to singing it live, but I wasn't sure how that song was going to play out, to be honest. I was kind of curious, and I was uncertain. And in the end, when we did play it live, it came out great. So I couldn't really believe it. I was like, oh, wow, this song is really working with the public. So I was really happy about that, but I was unsure at the time. But it's just another really cool track from the Symbol of Salvation record. And when we did that record in its entirety, it was pretty cool to do that, because you really kind of find out, like, what a record's all about. And it's, again, Symbol is one of those records that's pretty diverse. You know, it's got the Slammers with Rain of Fire and Tribal Dance and the title track. And then it's got a lot of diversity with songs like Another Day and Tainted Past. And, then you end it with Spineless, which is a total Slammer. So, and Burning Question was one of those songs. Like, I remember saying live that this was kind of like our arena rock song. And I made the joke because we were playing clubs. So I was like, imagine we're in an arena. Come on, everybody, just imagine we're in an arena. And, you know, the crowd was cracking up because I was, you know, taking the piss out of myself a little bit and having fun. I like to bust my own chops as well as everybody else's. So, and it worked. It was great. And Burning Question actually was a great live song in the end.
Yeah, it's funny that you say your arena song, because whenever I hear that song, I think it's one of those fantastic, underrated, driving 80s style songs. It's got that vibe of an 80s style in a very good way, in a positive way. And it's one of my go-to songs for Saint when I want to hear something. Certainly, it's not one of the obvious ones. And I hope you add it to the live stream show. Just saying, just throwing that out there.
Well, it's cool that you like a deep track like that. Yeah. I mean, I dig that. I mean, that's great.
Awesome.
Believe me, I'm always excited when people tell me their favorite songs, or, you know, especially they're not the obvious ones. So that's great.
Well, when it comes to you, your vocal performance, when it comes to Armored Saint, rather, I have a favorite John Bush song in Armored Saint. Actually, my favorite performance from you vocally was in A Band You're Not In Anymore. But for Armored Saint, it's Raising Fear. I just love the way you attack that song. Is that song, does that give you trouble these days, being that kind of song that really pushes you vocally?
Well, you know, I sang kind of strange on Raising Fear as a whole. It was, I don't know what was going on with my voice at that point, but I guess Dave was kind of pushing me to sing higher. I think he was on a really strong accept kick, and Udo, you know, he has that really kind of high voice.
Right.
Who I love as a singer. But I was like going higher than that. You could do it higher. And I was like, damn, dude. All right, let's go. And then after I listened back to it, I'm like, what was I doing? Like at times I almost felt like I had inhaled helium and I was singing like that. So it was pretty funny. But, you know, I mean, look, sometimes you have to make adjustments. You know, when you're singing a record that was 30 years later, which Raising Fear came in 87 or 97, you know, that's 33 years ago. So, I mean, but I believe it or not, I think that the way my voice sounds the best these days is this kind of mid-range sound that I have, the really warm part of my voice. It just sounds full. And I'm able to do high parts, but I just make the adjustment to make it sound a little bit warmer in a register that's a little easier to sing. And then, you know, look at, I utilize my background singers, Joey and Jeff, and even Gonzo are great singers. And, you know, if I need a little help to, you know, supplement this part, you know, Jeff has a pretty high voice, and maybe he'll take the higher part, I'll reinforce the low part. As long as it sounds full, you know, I think that's the key. But, you know, that's the way it is. Sometimes you do have to make adjustments. I used to freak out on it back in the day, going, if I can't do it live, I ain't doing it. But it's like, look, you want to make a great record, you want the record, that's the thing that's immortal, that's the thing that lives on. So make it the best you can be. Don't put any limitations on it, which is what we do now. And then live, we'll figure it out, you know. And I never use, it's not like we have stuff on tape or anything like that. I'd rather have something sound a little different than have it be, you know, a bunch of vocals on tape.
Oh, thank you.
You know, not doing it, really. That would be lame.
Yeah, no,
that's
I agree.
That's not for me.
No, I hear you, and thanks for pointing that out. I mean, look, like I was saying earlier, you know, fans want the artists to, you know, to please themselves, to be happy with what they do. But for me personally, I hate going to see bands when they're using the backing tracks. It just, I get why they do it, but no, I'd rather they sound like crap than use the backing tracks. I get it though.
I mean, for me, I don't want to hear anything that's perfect. I mean, I always say this more fun. Believe me, I always say we're like a glorified garage band because that's where we started. We're a little bit loose. I mean, always entertaining, always high energy, but, you know, there's mistakes, there's flaws, there's funky notes here and there, there's probably fluctuating drum beats, but you know what? These days with Pro Tools and everything being, you know, so specific, and I like it, you know, I want to hear mistakes. Like, to me, that's live. I don't want perfection because we're not perfect. We're not a perfect human being, so why do I want music that's perfect? It doesn't make any sense. Try to avoid the train wrecks if possible, because you know, then it's like, oh no, where are we? Oh no, we're completely off. I mean, I believe it or not, it happens. So if it happens, you just kind of laugh it off and go, okay, let's start over. And as a fan, personally, especially these days, I would find that endearing in some weird way to hear that, because to me, it would seem like, wow, you're getting something that is just a rare moment, you know. I mean, it's not a Broadway show over here. It's metal. It's
yeah.
Rock. So it's like, you know.
And it's kind of engaging the fans and involving them in the process. You know, it's like, oh, they realize they screwed it up for us. They want to get it right for us, you know. And
exactly.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah, you know, who knows? So many things have happened. I mean, I'm a mess on stage. I have fancy to kick people, you know, the guitar player's guitar chords out and step on their pedal board and, you know, knock them out and, you know, fall in a hole on stage, and you know, I'm a big bass on stage. So, but at least you're getting the captured moment of something that's real, that's something that's live, something that's not rehearsed. I get it. It works for certain groups, you know, and I understand that. But you know, Armin's saying is not like that. You never know what you're going to get live. And you know, don't get me wrong, I think we're a pretty tight band, but there may be some mistakes here and there. And like I said, I kind of welcome it. So,
when you're on stage and you're at a show where there's a particularly rowdy crowd and you've got fans yelling out songs, and maybe you pick up on they're really, really relentlessly calling for this song, you know, when that happens, do those impact calling your audibles to the guys on stage? I mean, can the crowd literally on the spot influence what you guys wind up doing?
Well, yeah, I love doing that. I like changing the set a lot. Because again, it creates spontaneity. You know, like I said, this is not a Broadway musical. It's rock. It's hard, you know. So, I mean, for me, I dig it. I mean, I personally think people stick to the set list too much in music. I get it for, you know, if you're a big giant arena band like Maiden or something, because everybody's tied in with the lights and, you know, the effects.
Right, of course.
You know, when Eddie comes out, and I understand, you know, so you can try to differentiate the set too much. But if you're a club band, you know, it's like, oh, we're changing it tonight. Oh, let's take that song and put a new one in, you know, or put an old one in, or just change the order. Gonzo gets pissed at me when I do that. He's more of a methodical kind of guy, and he likes the consistency. And when I do it, he gets annoyed. But I like to, you know, and I'm thinking, hey, there's a cool website. It's called setlistfm.com, and you can go to it, and you can find set lists of shows from like in the 70s, you know, which is crazy. I don't know if they're accurate, they seem right, but I consult that a lot for all my fan shows, actually. So, like, what do we play here? This is our second time in Boston, and you know, 2 years, what was the set? Oh, we played that, okay, let's change that.
That's awesome.
Oh, we played that song, so let's change that one out, too. So, I dig doing that. To me, it's the last thing I want is a repetitive set list all the time, especially the obvious choices. And, you know, that's me as a musical fan. That's me as a band member. I always love messing around and tinkering with the set list and changing it up.
And
even
hey,
to the dismay of my band members at times.
Right. And if the crowd is relentlessly screaming out up yours, you know, hopefully you take it the right way.
Well, we have a classic, you know, it was a classic moment that goes to a friend of ours who's now a friend, been a friend for years. It's a show, it's a memory. We played in Oakland, California, the Omni. It was 1988. We were on tour with Michael Schenker Group. It was Robin McCauley was a senior. He got sick, so he couldn't play. So they said, do you guys want to still play? And we said, yeah, all right, well, we'll still play. It was going to be a sold-out show. Granted, Shanker wasn't going to play, but they said, do you want to still play? And we said, yeah. But in the meantime, somebody went on the radio and said, oh, the show's not happening after all, it's canceled. Then they said, do you still want to play? And we're like, well, wait a minute, the show is canceled. And I said, well, we'll still have you play. And we're like, yeah, but no one's going to be here. Why are we going to play? And in the end, they said, well, okay, we'll go back on the air and say we're going to that Armored Saint's going to play. We're like, all right. Well, the information didn't really get out. It more got out that Shanker wasn't playing and the whole show was canceled. So I'd say there was probably 25, 30 people there. And then this one guy who, like I said, has become a good friend of mine after that, but he was the first time he had ever seen Armored Saint. He was yelling shit, and he yelled at Underdogs. And it was our tour, and we had not practiced it. It wasn't part of the set. So Dave went into it. I was like, okay, and Dave went into it, and then we tried to play it, and we ruined it because we didn't know it. And it led to a fight, and I don't think it led to a fierce fight, but it really led to like a bad screaming match after the show. And I blamed my friend Dan. I was like, dude, you made us do that. We played it, and we still never have done it, but it's hilarious memory of that in association with that show that was weird as it was. But, it's one of those memories that we have. And it's funny because we just put Underdogs back in the set after years, and we've been playing it live, and it's killer. It's amazing. It's a great live song. So we kind of had to exercise the demon of that one gig. So there you go.
I know I've kept you a lot longer than you were expecting, so thanks for your time. And before I let you go, I want to give Saint fans a glimpse of who you are away from the band, away from music. You know, not John Bush the singer. You know, not nothing that you've done throughout your musical history. You know, you're just John. So who are you in your daily life? You know, do you shop a lot? Do you shop a lot at Costco? Do you remodel? Do you like remodeling your home? Are you a socialite? Like, who are you?
Wow. That's funny. You're going to make me do some soul searching here. I love playing basketball. I still play pickup hoops. I haven't been able to for 6 months now because of this craziness. But even at my age, I still can hold my own a little bit with some hoops. And I'm not, I don't have the greatest shot, but I'm a pretty good passer, and I still love doing that. I'm a kind of stay-at-home dad. I mean, it's not so exciting, but I'm kind of the Uber driver a lot of the times for my kids and their activities. They're both really athletic. My daughter plays roller derby, which is really cool. And my son is a pretty awesome hockey player. So, I do that a lot. I help my wife with a business that she has. We do commercial casting, which is cool. And she built this company up, and was trying to keep it afloat because, again, back to COVID, a lot of commercials aren't being produced, but we try hard in keeping that going, so I help with that, and, I could do various jobs there, even taking out the garbage. I know it's not, the rock star that people want to think of, but, I'm a pretty humble guy, really, when it comes right down to it. I'm a straightforward dude. I grew up in lower middle-income neighborhood in L.A., predominantly Latino. That's why a lot of my friends included band members. Some of them are Hispanic, and I was a white boy growing up, so I learned a lot about culture. I don't know. I love movies. I love laughing. To me, humor is everything in life. And, me and several friends, we just have a text link where it's just nonstop ball busting all the time. And, that kind of carries me in life. And I think it should be carrying a lot of people in life right now with this COVID thing, because it's weighed down on society, man. It's a challenge for people right now, and I empathize with those people. And we still got this election to deal with, so America's been a country in flux for sure. But you can play music and escape, and that's what I do, and and rock out, and that metal and music will get you through, and that's what I push people to do, because that's what I try to do. So, I'm a normal guy. I'm a blue-collar type dude.
Yeah, John Bush, the rocker, takes out the trash. You know, even rock stars take out the trash. You know, it's funny you mentioned that. I did a live on air interview with Yngwie Malmsteen, and he's on his cell in the kitchen, and you can actually hear him taking out his trash while he's talking to me. And it's like
well,
even rock stars.
Well, they could have waited, you know.
they're just
you know, I guess that's being honest. I like it.
I mean, hey, I had one of my guys here do an interview with I forget the guy's name, but he was in a car driving. He's one the wrestler guy who also has a band. He was in his car driving.
Chris Jericho,
right. And you could actually hear him weaving in and out of traffic, turning on his turn signal because he's trying to get to the arena, but conduct the interview while he's trying to get to the arena. It's like everybody's just a regular dude, of course, right?
Well, it's funny. I was trying to hurry up and get to the destination. We're having some dinner with some friends, and I was like, we got to hurry up because I don't want to be driving trying to do an interview, mainly because I'm like a lot of men and I can't multitask too well. So I'm like, I will kill us. Like, let's get there so I can sit in the car by myself and make the call and do the interview and not be driving. Because Chris could do it. That's great. I probably would not do it and put my wife and I in danger and other people.
Yeah, it's good that one of my guys here did the interview and not me, because I'd be like, dude, are you really driving your car? And I'd probably cause the guy to crash.
Well, I mean, you know, at least you're getting a spontaneous moment.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and then suddenly I'm the enemy of hard rock and heavy metal because I killed just Chris Jericho.
No, that would be a bad day.
So the new Armored Saint album is Punching the Sky. It'll be out October 23rd via Metal Blade Records. I am dead serious when I say it may be the band's finest. Every song is catchy. Nothing sounds out of place. It's all very metal. I don't hear any filler. It has all the signatures of typical Armored Saint. And Wind Hands Down was tough to follow up, and I think you guys have eclipsed it, and even Symbol as well. So
you're giving us high accolades. I appreciate that. I really do.
I'm sorry to say that I'm kind of setting you up to be for the downfall, like it's all downhill from here. You know, you're talking about stepping stones with each record, and I'm like, well, yeah, you got to step even higher, you know, in 5 years from now. But you have set the bar high.
To be a downer, but I always view every record as the potentially last record, just because it might be. So, you know, I'm not saying I want that to be the case, but if it is, we're going off on a high note, so there you go.
Well, I agree with that. And again, thank you so much for your time, John. I really appreciate it. Us Armored Saint fans, we greatly appreciate it. Stay safe. Best wishes to you and yours. And we're looking forward to that live stream, that Armored Saint live stream. Give us the address one more time.
ArmoredSaint.veeps.com.
All right. So
come and watch it out. You know, watch the show, man. We really, you know, we want everybody to come check it out because, you know, we're going to feel weird and lonely in there with no fans, so we got to at least know that there's people watching us. And one day we'll play a show in New Hampshire. It's never happened in the history of the Saints, so we got to come there.
Awesome, awesome. So we will see you online very soon, and we will see you live in 2021. Thanks a lot, John. Take care.
Thank you, brother. Have a great weekend, and be safe.